When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Happy Horror Time. I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert. And today's special guest had her breakout performance opposite Nicolas Cage in the 1983 rom-com Valley Girl. But as horror fans, we remember her as Muffy and Buffy St. John in April Fool's Day, the slasher flick that begs the question, when are your friends taking a joke too far? She also starred in a slew of other 80s horror films like Destroyer, Waxwork, Sundown the Vampire in Retreat, and even the recently released Grizzly 2 Revenge. Please welcome to the podcast, Deborah Foreman.
Hello, Matt. Hello, Tim. It is my great pleasure to be here.
Oh, my God. The pleasure is all ours. We're so excited to have you on.
Yes. And I just want to say, before I forget, and before we get started on the horror focus questions, you are a very comedic, funny actress. And my chauffeur is hilarious. So I just want to get that out of the way real quick.
Thank you.
I know. Look, if we were going to talk about your entire resume, we could be on forever. But we do want to jump into some of the horror stuff. But just to take it back, I read that before you got into acting, you went to a modeling school and even did some modeling for Maybelline. Can you tell us a little bit about your modeling career and how that kind of led you into acting?
Yes. So I was age 13 living in Liberty, Texas. I have a dog that's really wanting to play with my feet right now, just so you know.
Oh, it's like,
I'm trying to talk and she's wanting to play. It's like, no, I'm talking.
Oh, I love dogs. We're big pet and dog people. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm 13. I'm living in Liberty, Texas. And basically my mom and dad put me into Barbizon because I was really shy and they felt that this would be an opportunity for me to sort of overcome that. So at the age of 14, I got my hardship license, which means that you can drive during the day only, can't drive at night. And I would drive from Liberty to Houston and attend my Barbizon classes. Oh. And it was through Barbizon that a photographer saw some of the footage, the film stuff I had shot at Barbizon, and hired me for Joskies and Foley's and Sanger Harris. These are department stores that were in Texas. They're not anymore. And then I would just drive myself to those, from Liberty. And it gelled, the acting gelled because I was in Houston and then we moved to Dallas and I was modeling in Dallas. And I met with a man named Bruce Cooper, who was Wilhelmina's husband and was a scout for Wilhelmina. And they told me to go take my book in there, my 11x14. they don't have them that big anymore. But back then we had to haul this big old portfolio.
The old portfolios.
I actually have one. I mean, it had like three pictures.
I work in advertising. So like when I first graduated college, I had like an actual portfolio too. So I totally get it.
Right. So they said, oh, he's going to tell you you're too short, but go in and meet him anyway. And that instigated, because he said, I want you to meet the people in Los Angeles, the head of theatrical and the head of commercial. He even wrote their names down on his letterhead on a piece of paper. So I'd have proof when I went to Los Angeles that I met him. And then we moved from Dallas to Los Angeles and I met with those people. They said, we can't take you till you're 18. And on my 18th birthday, I called them and boom, that was it.
Wow.
That's so exciting.
Was it like on your 18th birthday? Were you like, I'm jumping right into this? That's so
cool. I'm that person that when I got a script at my front door, I never put it on my coffee table and like waited to read it. As soon as I got it, I read the script. So I don't let grass grow under my feet. No.
Wow, I wish I had that.
I'm kind of like that, the type A type of person, like on top
type
of
the
yeah, Tim's type, Tim's maybe type C, D or
oh,
something.
Thank
like.
You.
Yeah, I wouldn't say you're Z.
Oh, that's nice.
No, that's really, really cool. I mean, before we jump into the movies, like
did you like horror films growing up, or did you have a favorite or like one?
Oh, 100%. I mean, since the age of 9. When I started to babysit my brother and mom and dad would go out, I was in front of the TV set watching Frankenstein and Dracula and the werewolf. Those were my favorites, the black and whites. Anytime I could find those, and I didn't care how many times I watched it, because I loved being scared. I loved something scaring me. So it's like, especially when you're in the living room by yourself.
Yes.
It's like, that was my favorite thing. So yes, I love horror films.
Wow. That is so cool because we say this a lot because we talk to, you know, a lot of different horror stars, and I'd say the majority of them aren't horror fans.
Not at all.
Nice. Like, it is so refreshing to hear you say that you love horror and love being scared. I mean, big surprise. So do we.
Yeah.
You know, moving right into April Fool's Day, which, by the way, I just want to say real quick before we even ask you about it, one of our favorite horror movies, and truthfully, and we're not just saying this because you're our guest, but it majorly because of your performance. Like, it really, you do such a great job playing one character pretending to be another character, and just it just really sets the whole chilling part of the movie. And so congrats on that. It's such a great performance in April Fool's Day. We just want to say that.
Thank you.
Yeah. But we wanted to ask, what was the audition process like for that? Because we've read so many different things on the internet. Like, I read one place that first, I think Linnea Quigley was supposed to be cast in the role of Muffy, but then she was doing Return the Living Dead. And then I read in another place that in a second audition, you like blew everyone away. Can you take us through kind of how the audition happened and how you got the part?
Okay, so this is just from my perspective and what I know and what I was told. Mm-hmm. I actually met with the director and the casting director on a regular meeting, no audition, just a meet. And I was dressed in 1940s garb because I was going directly to another audition where I was going to have to, you know, the sides and everything. And it was a baseball movie and the part was 1940s. So I was in this garb, you know. And so the director said to my agent, no on her because she reminded me of my grandma. And it was a photograph. It was a photograph he had of his grandma. Because I really went all out. When I did I did the hair. I had the rolled hair on the sides and pinned up. I mean, I went all out. Red lipstick. Fitted. It was all out. So he said I reminded him of his grandma in a photograph that he had, you know, as a child. So that was a no. But when I received that no, I just went, I took it as a yes. That was mine. It was mine. No matter what, it was mine. I think it was like 6 weeks later. Okay. So then I sort of just, you know, question. I never harassed my agents at all. I would, you know, wait for them to, you know, do stuff. And then I waited 6 weeks really to say, hey, so what happened with April Fool's Day? And then I don't know what happened, but I was able to get in. Now, this time when I went in for the audition, I was preppy. I was completely prepped out.
You're like, forget grandma.
I know, Muffy. Forget 40s. I've now prepped out. I want this part. This is my part. And I did. I went in and I'm told, yeah, I blew them away. And they offered it before I even got home. Because everything was on an answering machine, right?
Yeah.
So when I got home, the voicemail said, my agent, give me a call right now, you know, as soon as I got home. And I was told that I got it. And Jenny Wright was supposedly.
I remember her. Yeah.
Wait, Jenny Wright was supposedly what?
In the running for Muffy Buffy. She thought she was going to get it.
Wow.
So that's all. That's the only person I heard. I never heard about Lene. In fact, Lene's never even said anything to me because we've had dinners and stuff like that. You know, maybe Maybe. Internet. I don't know.
That's why I love asking these questions. You never know, like, if the internet's going to be accurate or what. But, like, that is so cool. You know what I love about that story is that you, like, they said no, and I'm going to take that as a way to, like, prove them wrong. Like,
I mean, yes. That's my yes. I heard yes. That's all I heard.
I will say this. This is off topic, but I'm going off script, Matt. The way everyone dressed in April Fool's Day was so preppy. I took that as, like, a handbook, and I, like, dressed like all of you in April Fool's Day.
It Tim is so, still dresses
I
to this
still
day.
Dress like the people in April Fool's Day. It is so preppy.
I loved it. I loved our wardrobe that we got to wear. I liked
Oh my
it.
Gosh. It's so
Most
awesome.
Important question, Deborah. Did you ever see the picture of the director's grandma to see how much you really looked like her or not?
No, he never showed it to me. Nope. In fact, we've never talked about it. That was only relayed through my agent. Oh. And he never discussed it. The only thing Fred really imposed on me and really made it clear to me is that if I didn't make these two characters distinctly different, that this film would not do well.
That was my next question. I was going to ask you, how did you approach playing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
I was given the challenge. I was just given that challenge, you know, and then I just went for it because I was not going to let a film flop on my shoulders because of me.
No, I was just going to say, did you look at it as, did you try to play two completely separate characters, or was it always in your mind, like, I'm playing Muffy pretending to be Buffy?
No, I took it as these are two completely people. I took it as this was a real individual, or then the joke wouldn't be, they wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
If I was really in that situation, I wouldn't want them to know. My friends, I wouldn't want them to know. So you have to fully be that person. And I did it. I went for it.
No, I know. I mean, you definitely, they really do feel like two different, completely distinctly different characters. So I think it's very interesting to, like, how you approach that as an actor, like, whether you're in your mind, like I said, like, always thinking I'm one person pretending, but that could get, I guess, really convoluted if you're always thinking about that versus trying to really portray two different characters. But geez, what a lot of, like, a weight on your shoulder. Did the director say that right at the beginning? Like, you have to nail this?
Yes, in rehearsals, he said that to me.
Oh my God, it's such a cool cast. And, like, it looked like you guys were having so much fun. And I have to ask, did you get along? I mean, like, I read that you had 2 weeks, what's that called? Rehearsal.
Yes, we had rehearsal, and then we got to hang out. We all went on group lunches for a period of time, getting to know each other because we're supposed to be really, you know, great friends. Do you know that's the only cast that I literally keep in touch with? Tom Wilson, Leah Pinsent, Deborah Goodridge, Amy Steele, Pulitzer, and then who else? Clayton Runner. Although Clayton, he dropped off of social media, so it's kind of hard because, you know, everybody now keeps in touch with by social media. So, but Clayton Runner, when he was on Facebook and Instagram.
You guys met, but they had you actually staying at a hotel together for a few weeks before filming started, right?
Well, we stayed in that hotel the whole time.
Oh, so, like, was it awkward at first not knowing them, or did you guys all just right away start, like, really hanging out? I mean,
no, we started instantly hanging out. That was one thing I just knew innately how important it is to sort of, I moved around a lot as a child, so it's very easy for me to make friends and be at their dinner table that night. That I knew that it was extremely important for us to have that kind of, and I grew up around that, you guys. Liberty, Texas, I mean, my gosh, the heart of the United States lives in Liberty, Texas. It's just there's a heartbeat there that still, my best friend to this day, since I've known since eighth grade, is still my best friend since Liberty, Texas.
That's so cool.
And his mama and his mom and papa are my mama and papa. So that carries with me. That's part of that's me. That's part of in my DNA that, you know, I bring that to a set, whether it's liked or not, it doesn't matter. That's their path. I always bring that to the set.
Yeah. And the thing is, I'm thinking as a director doing a movie with a lot of people who are supposed to be good friends, what a perfect strategy to have them hang out beforehand. So it's really believable, you know, versus like just pretending when the cameras go on.
Martha Coolidge did the same thing. Martha Coolidge had us girls hanging out. We all hung out, actually, is what we ended up doing. Because how can we not invite Nick and Cameron? Yeah. You know, we're to all the places we went to. So we hung out for a couple weeks too before we started that film. That was a necessary one because that shoot was like 3 weeks long.
Oh my gosh.
It was a very quick shoot, and we had to really instantly become, you know, the four girls friends fast.
Yeah.
Wow. And make that believable too.
No, that makes sense. So I just have the personal random question about the beginning of April Fool's Day and just your interpretation. So, you know, the film starts obviously with Muffy remembering someone giving her this Jack in the Box as a kid, which like scares the shit out of her and has this creature that comes out. And I'm just wondering, was that in your interpretation, or maybe it was told to you, was that put in the film because that was supposed to be like the moment that traumatized her and led to her being obsessed with like playing these cruel jokes on people? What are your thoughts on that?
I've never really thought about it. So, but that's a great, I'll go with that. I like that.
That opening score and that beginning, I was like, oh, Muffy is traumatized.
Well, that's the thing. And I know, look, Deborah, just so you know, like,
or we're trying to make you think she's traumatized.
Yeah, I bought it.
She does have a wicked sense of humor. So, you know.
We are such horror fanatics. We like to like pick apart things in like some of our favorite movies and like little things that probably most people haven't thought about. But it's like, I was like, they must have put this scene in for some reason. And it's like, I'm thinking, is this girl so traumatized that now she can't get over, like has to play jokes on people?
Well, we dissect these films. And like, obviously one of the ones that came along first was When a Stranger Calls, also directed by Fred Walton. What was your relationship like working with Fred Walton? Was he cool or was he like strict or I don't know?
He was very strict.
He was.
He's very specific. Like he's extremely specific. And I learned that I had a sweater on the set. It was one of those preppy sweaters with the, you know, the, I want to call Harlequin, it's not Harlequin, but you know, the squares on the front. It's the one with Amy Steele and Ken Olent and myself, the three of us out front of the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had stretched the bottom of it because I'm a girl and I wanted the sweater to, you know, hang over my butt. And he came over to me and he tried to put it back on my waist. Well, I had overstretched it and wouldn't go back onto my waist. And he said, you go back to the wardrobe trailer and you get the second one. And don't, because I told him, he said, why? I said, well, I stretched it, you know, because I'm honest that way. And so he said, and you are not to stretch it. Well, I learned in that moment how specific he was. So if I had to come into a scene carrying a basket, carrying a candle, whatever, I always went to him first before I did the scene. And I would say, would you like me to hold the candle this way, the basket this way, the whatever, the tea box I have, you know. In fact, when I come into the kitchen, you guys, I'm carrying a tea box and I'm pointing at something. On that tea box was the very quote I say at the dinner table. It was just, you know, it was synchronicity. No one planned that. But that's why I'm pointing at it, because I even showed everybody in the room and I said, oh my gosh, there's a quote that I say at the dinner table. So when I come in, I'm pointing at it. That's because I know personally, the actress Debbie Foreman knows that quote is on that box. Oh, that was me.
I can't wait to watch it again.
I know. I didn't. Yeah, I didn't notice that.
But he's very, very specific. And I honored, I think he hurt my feelings when he did that with the sweater. But it's a show business. It's not show personal. It's show business. And so I let that go. And I honored that I'm specific. Okay. But this guy is way more specific than me. And I liked it. I mean, I think it shows up really well. In fact, he would notice nuances that I would do. Like at one time I did this thing where I took my hand and I my hair behind my ear and I was playing with my earring. And he said, I want you to do that when you take your earrings off. But I was just doing that, like, not when the cameras were rolling. I was just, you know, and then he noticed that I was stretching my face because my face can get tight sometimes. And I was just trying to relax my face before I went into the scene, and I'm stretching my mouth out, like just real wide open. He goes, add that to the scene. And so after, when Tom Wilson comes up, and that was at the door where he says, asking if he's collar up or collar down, or Deborah Gerger's there. I do this weird stretching of my mouth.
I remember it.
That was Fred saying, put that in. So I just randomly, I mean, there was no thought behind it. Just, I just did it and then went on with the scene, you know?
So when she goes, who, how? And then she goes, is that right?
Yeah, something. I remember, I mean, I haven't seen the film in a while, but I remember it was right there with Debbie, myself, and Tom in our interaction with each other. And it was, he had me add that to the scene with no, don't explain it, just do it.
I'm just wondering, because I also feel like it'd be great to have a director who's very specific because it gets exactly at what you need to do. But I'm wondering, does that mean, was Fred very much against improv, or did you guys ever improv in this film?
I don't think so. No, I always stuck to words on the script. So, so my homework was already done. So if he wanted to add nuances to what I was already doing, I was, if something feels wrong, I'll always say something. And then I'll still divorce it and let it go and still do what they want to do. But I'll say something if it just feels like, because I'm pretty good about when I'm in it, what feels really organic and authentic.
Yeah.
I can feel that.
And you had double duty because you're also playing, multiple.
Make sure it feels organic for two different people.
One's a killer.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then sometimes in the same day, I was, both of them.
Wow. Yeah. So, okay, now this is a big, big question for you. So we've heard a ton of rumors about alternate endings for April Fool's Day. And so let me just tell you everything I've heard. And then I want you to tell me what's actually true. So in one of them, I heard that it was actually Muffy's twin brother, Skip, who pretends to slit your throat in that ending scene, but it's still a joke. And, everyone's there laughing. And then I also read in another one, Skip is actually really trying to kill you, I guess, to get some of the inheritance, but the character Rob jumps in and saves you and ends up killing Skip. I'm just wondering, how many alternate endings were filmed, and do you know why some were scrapped, or are any of those that I just described even correct?
Okay, I can only say about the one where Skip was trying to kill his twin, because I've seen pictures, so I know it was filmed, but honestly, I do not even remember. All I remember is, okay, we finished the film and then they had us go back. Leah Pinsett and myself went back for retakes. And that's when that scene was made. That scene was actually shot in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the one where, yes. So I had to, pretend to get drunk and, do that scene with her. So that was added after the fact, that scene.
That scene totally scares me.
No, it is. It's a great ending scene, but I'm wondering, but you said you've seen pictures of yourself shooting the scene?
I've seen a picture of Skip trying to slit my throat. So it's a footage. It's something I saw it on the internet, just like everyone else. It's not like I own it.
But you don't remember shooting it.
No, I have no clue. When I'm in it, I don't have recall. It's like some of the scenes I didn't. Heidi Holliker brings up stuff that we did on Valley Girl. It's like, okay, I'll just take your word for it that it happened, because I don't remember it happening.
Right. I can't remember what I did last week. So I can't remember what I did 35 years ago.
I love it. Yeah. First off, by the way, I'm glad that they didn't do an ending where there was something really, it would have changed the whole tone of the film if there was really, he was really trying to kill you and someone ended up getting killed. Then the whole
Think that was one's true, but the other of the fake, him pretending to kill me. Yes, I think that's true.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Was it fun being a crazed killer? I mean, my favorite scene in the movie is the jump on the table. The jump on the table and your preppy outfit and the huge knife.
Oh, when you're running around. Yeah. When you're running around with Amy Steele, literally.
Yes.
Was that one of your enjoyable scenes?
I loved that scene. I loved it. In fact, I was so shocked, you guys, that I was able to jump on that table boom. I just nailed that. And we didn't even rehearse it. He just said, you're going to jump on the table. I didn't even go from chair to table. I went boom, straight from the floor of the table.
It's so great. It's such a crowd pleaser.
Again, I'm like, when I'm in it and I'm in this heightened emotional state of being, I don't know, another person jumps in my body. I have no idea.
Perhaps a killer.
I cannot explain it. I just do it. And I'm so happy it ends up being really good. So that's all.
I have to ask, I would love to know, what is your opinion as Debbie Foreman on playing that type of joke on your friends, no matter what the reason is for it. Would you say that Muffy went a little too far?
Yeah, Debbie Foreman wouldn't go that far. Because mine would be, not with the blood and seriously making people think that they're dead. That's cruel on it's anybody's so cruel. Organs. I know so, it's cruel.
I was hoping you'd say that. Yeah, incredibly cruel. But what I love, my favorite part about is after, like, you know, they're mad for maybe a couple minutes, then they're all just like partying and everyone's okay with that.
Champagne.
I'd be like, my yes. friendship is over with this girl.
Well, it is the movies.
Exactly. And speaking of the partying scene, that like at the end, right before the tacked on scene, they're like, they all partying. There's like pouring champagne all over you. Please tell me they only did one take of that scene because you're like getting doused in champagne at the end.
Yeah, I don't recall. I don't think that Fred did a lot of takes anyway. I don't recall him doing like Martha. I don't recall him doing a lot of takes. You know, when you have rehearsals and you have it down, when you're just sort of then having fun when you get to be in front of the camera. So maybe two, maybe three, but gosh, I'm only thinking two takes per set. Really.
So when the movie's wrapped and it's all like done, is there a red carpet premiere or screening at Paramount, or when do you get to see yourself on the big screen? And what did you think?
I always hated looking at myself back when. I like it now, but when I was younger, I did not like watching myself on film, especially after I saw Valley Girl. I was mortified. Yeah, that was my reaction. And it was my mom's reaction too. Maybe I was more mortified because she was mortified. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what she was expecting, but later now in years, we've appreciated. I just don't know. I was not born in that business. I was not groomed to be in that business. So that aspect was like, it was hard for me to look at. April Fool's Day, I do remember going to a screening of April Fool's Day, but I think it was a long time after the fact.
Oh, like in Westwood or something? Oh. I would picture
no, at Paramount. It was oh. No. I've never been to any. None of my films ever had any premieres.
And not even like when you say a screening, like a cast and crew screening, or just like years later, you just happened to just, go see it.
No, only cast and crew for some of them. For some of them, I just would see it at the cinema. And even the Valley Girl musical that came out. In 2020, we were supposed to have a big premiere. And of course, it got canceled because of our situation we're still in. Yeah. So no, I haven't. I've yet to have one of those. That's on my bucket list.
You'll get one.
You don't worry. Yeah. Also, so I've heard from other perspectives, but was there ever any talk with you about making a sequel? Because we heard Deborah Goodrich talked about there was talk of a sequel with her character and Chaz opening like a B&B in New York City or something like that. Did you ever hear anything about a sequel or them wanting to bring Muffy back?
No. And it was news to me when she said it at our Q&A that we did, you know, so many years ago. No. And I know they did a remake of April Fool's Day, which I've never seen.
I was going to ask you. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I've not seen the musical Valley Girl either. And I won't, because Valley Girl is way too personal to me. So I can't watch other people speak our words and kiss each other. It's like, no, it's like Debbie and Nick. And then my brain will get all muddy. So it's like, nope, I can't go there. But I would love now at our age, I would have to try to talk Tom Wilson into doing it. I don't know if he'd be so much on board, but everybody else, I think they would.
I think Tom Wilson would do it. Biff?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, if now, and I'm hoping that your answer is there is going to be the same. If now it's 35 years later, you were approached to reprise the role of Muffy St. John in an April Fool's Day sequel, would you be up for doing it?
100%.
Awesome. Oh. We're so
100%. Yes.
I mean, that's the kind of thing, like, horror obviously is becoming even more and more mainstream, and a lot of like you see with the new Halloween movies bringing back Jamie Lee Curtis, and like they're going to be rebooting Exorcist. Like, I feel like rather than remaking some of these movies, let's just revisit these characters.
Muffy and Buffy, are you kidding me? I would love it.
Well, the jig's up on Buffy.
Well, it doesn't matter.
I think everyone knows, but I would love for maybe, I don't know, maybe Muffy, the joke's on Muffy and she's believing
it
about something.
I think no matter what, there's twins, one's scary, one has their hair straightened. It's scary. It's good.
We're going to bring out some sweaters.
Yeah.
No, that's so cool to hear. We love when we hear these people like yourself that we have been such big fans of and these movies that we absolutely love, that they would be so, you know, they still embrace them and it'd be up for making sequels, because this is the type of movie it could go in so many different directions. So fingers crossed.
Yeah.
You know, so I know you've been in a number of other horror movies throughout your career, but since we don't have time to go in depth on all of them like we do with April Fool's Day, you know, if it's okay with you, we'd like to just ask you like a couple questions about some of them. You know, 2 years after April Fool's Day in 1988, you starred as stunt woman Susan Malone in Destroyer. And
yes.
Funny enough, your boyfriend in this movie just happened to also be your April Fool's Day co-star, Clayton Rohner, who played Chaz. We were just wondering, when you auditioned for Destroyer, did you know Clayton was also auditioning, or did you guys both get connected to the film because of being in April Fool's Day?
I think Clayton had something to do with me getting it. It was just offered to me, so I didn't have to audition for that one.
Oh, wow.
And I loved doing that. I loved that character that I, you know, put together, and her haircut, and she was sort of a tomboy but cool. I, you know, her hair was almost like Clayton's, like her, they had similar hairstyles. And I loved working with Lyle Alzado, who was like this champion cheerleader every day coming to set, and made you feel like you were like doing something really cool. Like he would come over to me after I would do something, and he would just like, you know, express how he felt about what I had just done. Just a really kind and giving and wanted to learn and just loved the whole process. So, and I loved being in Denver, and I loved our weird, you know, with that we shot in some kind of abandoned warehouse, and just the whole thing was cool.
You know, and you play such a strong character. It's like she's really strong. I mean, go through it. And also, as a stunt woman, I have to ask, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this question, but just because of the irony that you're playing a stunt woman, you take like two leaps off a prison rail. And I swear it looks like it could, onto a big bag. It looks like it could have been you. I'm assuming it wasn't, even though you're literally playing someone who steps in for someone.
No, it was me, because I was scared to do it. And then when I tried it one time, I liked it so much, I just kept on doing it.
Are you serious? Oh my God. Yeah, I swear, because it really looks like you.
But I did have a stunt. Yeah, I did have a stunt double as well. And then they realized they didn't need her, because with the bag that I got to, you know, fly into and bounce around on was so enormous that I had no fear whatsoever.
That's so cool. Oh. I wanted to ask that question for a reason, because again, usually, especially like in 80s films, you can kind of tell when a stunt person takes over, but I'm like, that looks like Deborah Foreman taking the jump off of the
right.
And like I said, it's so ironic because you're literally playing a stunt person who comes in for someone. So
did you get like your stunt woman card or anything?
No.
I was gonna ask, so the director of the prison flick being filmed in Destroyer is played by none other than psycho legend himself, Anthony Perkins. What was that like?
He was just there for the day. Oh. And I didn't get to, you know, do too much communication. His scenes, we only had the one scene, and then all the other scenes were with other people. So, you know, I just kind of got to meet him, like shake his hand and say some words.
Electrocution scene, right? He's the one who gets was that the big scene with him when he gets electrocuted?
It's been a while since I've seen
know.
The film.
It's been some time too, but yeah, I could tell that he probably, but you only just worked with him for one day on the set?
Yes, that was it.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's so funny when, you know, you see different horror legends together in it and, you know, different people who've been in the movies. And I think that, you know, it's so hard to see him as anything but Norman Bates, but it was a good character in the film. And, you know, that same year, you also starred as Sarah Brightman in Waxwork opposite Zach Galligan. And just had to ask you. So, you know, it's such a fun film. And at the very end, there's this like epic fight scene that you and Zach are in where you're literally fighting against, like, I think every wax figure that's come to life. Do you remember what it was like filming that scene? Like, did they just have stunt people all over? Was that choreographed?
And is that handsome?
He's so handsome. He's still handsome. He's still so handsome. I recently saw Dana Ashbrook at Santa Fe Comic Con. I mean, literally 3 weeks ago or something. Oh. And he's a silver fox. So,
oh, I saw. Yeah, he is. I agree.
He's and still has his wonderful, charming self. Yeah, because Tony Hickox, the director, I think he shot that in one. You know, it was all choreographed. Everybody knew what they were supposed to do. And it was all shot in one it was a circle in the stage that we were shot. It was a half circle, I think it was. And he got the, you'd have to look it up, but apparently we had some special designer design all of our sets, especially the vampire set was designed by a special designer that Tony was able to get. So, and Bob Keane was our special effects, who's wonderful. So that was choreographed. I felt more of that was a romp for me. I didn't feel like I invested myself like I did with all the other films. You know, maybe because it was of the approach for the, of how the director approached it. And so I approached it with the same sort of surface, you know, vibe. And, but all in all, I loved that film.
It's a different character. I mean, it's very like the character you play is a lot different, like the one in Destroyer or something, because I felt like Sarah in Waxwork is a little bit more timid and, you know, not until the end is she really a fighter, whereas like in Destroyer, you are just a tough fighter the entire time, like no bullshit type of person. But I just thought it was interesting because in Waxwork, it's such an epic scene. And I'm just like, how tough that is to film, you know?
Yes. And then Waxwork 2 came along 4 years later, but there was a different Sarah.
Yeah. That's because Tony Hickox and I were boyfriend and girlfriend after we shot that film. And so when they went to go part two, we had broken up.
That makes sense.
Oh, okay.
So that's why. And that's the only reason why.
That's why, because I was like, wait, Zach Galligan came back and then there's a different person as Sarah. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and she's taller and she looks completely different. More like a model.
Did you see Waxwork 2?
No, I did not see it.
Why would she?
Maybe in Waxwork 3, we can bring you back as Sarah.
That would be weird. But you know what? It's Hollywood. You just never know. I mean, don't you remember the TV shows back in the 80s? Well, they would replace somebody and then they wouldn't tell you why. They just replaced them. Or maybe that person did end up coming back again.
Like on Roseanne, when they switched out Becky and then brought the original Becky actress back.
Okay, see, hello. That's Hollywood.
I'm a big soap person. They do it on soaps. Like, there's been like five Thorns. I know you watch The Bold and the Beautiful.
I watch General Hospital and Days of Our Lives.
Okay. I'm a CBS grandma.
That's so funny. You know, so then moving forward in 1989, you start as Sandy White, a vampire in the horror comedy Sundown, The Vampire in Retreat. You know, you have worked with a ton of horror icons. Another one in this one was Bruce Campbell, who played Robert Van Helsing. Most of your scenes, I think, are with him. So my question for you, what was it like, A, playing a vampire, and B, working with another horror legend, Bruce Campbell?
Well, at the time, I didn't even know who Bruce was. Tony knew who he was because Tony was a huge fan of Bruce's. All I knew is that Bruce was brilliant. That's all I knew as because I would get to see some of the dailies at night and Tony would look what he did here. Like when he has his shoe and he takes it off and he pours like sand coming out of his shoe. That was not in the script. You know, Bruce came up with all kinds of yummy things. And I think because he loved that character too. I think when you love something like David Carradine loved that character because he did not cause anybody. He was just lovely to work with. And I think when you hear those stories that actors, they're so hard to work with, that's because they don't really like the project they're working on. And, you know, for whatever reason, they took it. And David was lovely to work with. Bruce was lovely to work with. I met and see Emmett was in Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
So I was a huge fan of his from that.
Oh.
So, yeah, I loved it. And we were in Moab, Utah, and that was so beautiful to shoot there.
It looked beautiful. Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of, as we're, you know, doing a nostalgic journey through my past, I'm going, wow, I had some super good experiences. I'm lucky that way. Super lucky that way.
Yeah. And super fun movies. And then one more that we want to talk about, because it was just such a crazy story behind it and wanted to get your thoughts on it there.
Okay.
Grizzly 2 Revenge got a ton of buzz because apparently it was filmed in 1983, but wasn't officially released until like January 2021. And also, it, you know, looking back, it had a really impressive cast, including yourself, Louise Fletcher, John Rhys-Davies, and then like appearances by Laura Dern, George Clooney, Charlie Sheen. Uh-huh. So, you know, how did you feel about this old horror film finally seeing the light of day? Like, was it even still on your radar?
No, not on my radar at all, because I did that before everything. I did that before Valley Girl.
Oh, wow.
So I auditioned a whole lot too to get that role, and I finally got it. And then I got to go to Budapest and I think I was there for 2 months and meet Deborah Ruffin and John Rhys-Davies and Stephen Wood. And I randomly ran into Charlie Sheen and George Clooney and Laura Dern at the airport. Cause I was coming back from being in Vienna. Cause I thought I needed a McDonald's burger. and Budapest didn't have one. So I had to go to Vienna to get a McDonald's burger. And I was coming home on the flight. I was by myself. I'm 20 years old too. I'm thinking about, wow, I can't even believe I did all this. So I'm coming back on the flight and they're there and no one was there to pick them up. I go, well, let's just share a taxi. And we'll, you know, go back to the hotel. They get to the hotel. There's no room there for them because there was some kind of a convention and they had to put them in a hotel like 30 miles outside of the town. So they stayed with me until they can get that all situated. And then they drove them out there. And then George and Charlie and Laura and myself would go dancing every night in a castle.
It was literally a castle.
This was before filming started for Grizzly 2 or during or after?
During. Oh, during. It was a big party set.
Wow.
I remember just dancing all night most of the time I was there.
But you're only 20. How did you get into a bar?
Yeah. No, in Europe, you have to be 18.
Shows you how much I know.
Yeah. That's so crazy because you were all very young and in your careers. Uh-huh. But it's like, so did you hear about that it was being released this year? I mean, did you know it was released?
And have
in
you
January?
Seen it?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it. I've not. They contacted me, and then I haven't done any PR for it because it was just so long ago. I mean, it just really was just so long ago.
Matt and I thought you were wonderful.
Yes, it's
thank you.
Interesting movie. We'll keep it at that. It's very interesting.
That's why it wasn't released in the 80s.
It's just so funny because people, you know, seeing it in 2021 for the first time and then seeing so many people who have gone on to have such extensive careers, it's such like a fun, you know, like what is it called,
time capsule.
Just like when you like a guilty pleasure. That's what I'm looking for.
I didn't feel guilty.
It's such a guilty pleasure because I feel like if you just want to trip down memory lane, you should just take a look at it. It's just so funny to see all of these people together and know that, wow, this movie wasn't released till then. But that's so cool that, hey, at least you got to go to, you know, to, you said Austria, you said it was filmed? No,
yeah, Budapest.
In Budapest, yeah. Wow.
And then I got to go to Vienna as well, just on little getaways. My grandma came out and visited me and I got to show her Budapest, and then we went to Lake Balaton or something like that. I remember too, because we got on this train, which I loved taking the train everywhere, which I'd never been on one. Mm-hmm. And at every stop there was people with military rifles. I went, wow. Then you realize you're in Europe, you know.
Yeah.
And not only that, because it wasn't happening in the UK, you're just in another country that is, you know, really under a strict different experience than what you're used to. So Yeah, it was a good time. I'm glad my grandma got to go out and she got to see Budapest.
But no Big Macs, no McDonald's.
They do now because I have Jackson's.
I was gonna say, I feel like they have to have now. Well, it is just such a crazy story behind it. And that's what fascinated us, that like it was sitting and hadn't been released for so long. And again, the fact that there's so many stars in it and it gets released for the first time in 2021, and the fact that you did it before Valley Girl, but yet it's just being released now. It's just crazy.
So they ran out of money, and Arnold Copelson owned it for a really long time because George told me that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how it got out from under Arnold's hands. I don't know how all that happened, but he had it for a long time.
Oh, wow. And I have to ask, do you ever do horror movie conventions?
All the time.
Oh, that's awesome. No, yeah. What is the most common thing that you get asked by fans?
Huh. Or what do people always want to talk about?
Usually it's Valley Girl. Sometimes April Fool's Day. Valley Girl, why aren't you on the poster? I hear that a lot. Let's see, April Fool's Day. I think that what's interesting is when people are standing at my table and they see pictures from everything, because I have a selection of everything on my table. Then they go, oh, you were in so much. And then, so that one question sort of doesn't happen. Then they're like, they're just sort of caught up in the whole, like, oh, you were in this, like real genius. You know, people, there's a picture there displayed of that one. So, and then obviously Sundown is in my photographs. So
do you have the picture of you with the table on top of the table with the knife?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Because I'll get that one.
I know. Yeah. I feel like, I know with the shirt. Well, I know that's the thing. Like especially in such an extensive resume in that time period. So obviously we absolutely love April Fool's Day, but there's so many other movies. So it's so fun to like visit some of these and see these different performances, you know?
I know Valley Girl too, but this is a horror focused podcast.
And we were going to ask if you still keep in touch with any of, I think you said,
she said
the April Fool's Day cast, you still keep in touch with. Are there any other people from any of these movies we discussed that you still keep in touch with today?
Like Elizabeth Daly, periodically, maybe once a year, every other year. That's about it. I honestly, Tom Wilson is on my Instagram, and anything I post that he likes and anything he posts, I like. So we're like constantly in each other's thoughts, he and I, and Deborah Goodrich and Amy. So no.
Well, that's a good amount of people. And I also wanted to ask, what are you up to today? Because I've seen so many different things about, teaching Pilates and yoga, and also like designing jewelry and working as a web designer. And I was like, wow, that is a ton of different things.
So I did each one for a period of time now. But what one that threaded through my whole life since I was age 20 is photography. So I do say that I'm a photographer first.
Wow. And that's so cool. And you said so photography has been an interest of yours even through like while you were doing acting and all of that.
Oh, yeah, because I bought my very first professional camera, a Pentax, where you had to wind the film in the back.
Wow.
And I don't have that camera, which is a boo. That's boo on me. You know, I should have kept that one. But I got that when I was age 20, and I felt so like a big girl thing when I bought that camera.
Pictures on all the movie sets?
Yeah.
I have all kinds of pictures. Yeah. And then obviously we have our cameras now, and I do use our phones now. I do use that too, but I've got a professional setup with, you know, lighting and whole works when I have to do studio work.
That is so cool though, I love that you have like pursued all these different paths and different hobbies, even while you were, because I know, you know, people will hear your name and think of you for the films you've been in, but all these different, like really amazing skills, like that to me is like a true artist.
I don't wear that many hats.
I just chased creativity, or creativity chases me. I think we both are in love with each other. That's all.
No, that's great.
And that's, you know, so whatever is super creative, I'm in.
first off, Deborah, thank you so much. We have just one final question for you. And we ask this to every single person we interview. And it does kind of put you on the spot a little bit, but we love the answers we get for this. What is one thing that you can tell us about, let's say, your experience working on April Fool's Day that you've never told any other interviewer, publication, or podcaster? So meaning it can be one tiny detail, it can be the biggest thing, but it's something that you've never told at any convention or any reporter or any podcast.
Doesn't have to be scandalous. It could be
anything about work.
This isn't scandalous. I think it had to do with the second ending. I remember I had to lay on the floor. And I was there for 40 minutes and I couldn't move. And they were all shocked that I did it. But it was called for, and it was because of the setup. I couldn't move. And it was just, maybe the director wanted me to experience that. Who knows? Okay. But I did it with a smile on my face because it was part of the work. And I was led to believe it was part of the work. And so I just did it. Apparently if I moved, then everything would be off. And I don't know. I'm only just remembering nuances, but I laid in that position on the floor, and they positioned me too, my arms, legs, everything, pretending I was dead. And I had to be there for 40 minutes.
Ooh. Oh my God. And this was, you said, one of the alternate endings, do you think?
Yeah, I think it was cut because I don't even remember seeing it in the movie. So, yeah. But I did do it though. Wow. I do remember laying there.
In case Muffy and Buffy pass.
I can barely sit still for 10 seconds. Oh. I can't imagine 40 minutes.
No.
Yeah, that was interesting. That would be the only thing, like if there's any...
Oh, that was a good one. That was great.
No, that was a good one. We get such a variety of answers from, like, we've gotten very scandalous answers to, like, very, you know, small little tidbits and stuff. But we just love asking it and hearing those things that people haven't really told many times in interviews. But this has been
so much fun
for us. Seriously, we are so, so grateful that you took the time to chat with us. We're such big fans and really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're awesome.
Well, no, you guys were fun. I loved your questions, and there was flow, and we co-created something fun together. So awesome.
Yes, I loved it. So we will definitely be in touch. And again, I know that our listeners are going to love hearing about this and hearing all these great stories. So thank you so much for taking the time today.
Nice meeting you, Matt. Nice meeting you, Tim, and have a beautifully, beautiful day.
Yes, you too. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time.
This podcast is hosted by Tim Murdoch and myself, Matt Emmert. It's co-produced and edited by Jacob Randall, and we're now supported by Spreaker Prime.
We release episodes every Sunday and switch off between reviewing new horror movies and interviewing horror stars and insiders from iconic films.
You can stream all of our episodes directly from our website, which is happyhorrortime.com, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, our reviews do contain spoilers, which is why we try and let listeners know the movies that we're going to review in advance on our social media pages.
And speaking of social media, make sure to follow our pages on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Happy Horror Time. We even started putting some of our interviews up on the YouTube. You can find us by searching for Happy Horror Time.
If you'd like to support the podcast, please sign up to be a patron at patreon.com/happyhorrortime. That's Patreon, that's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patrons get access to our growing library of monthly bonus episodes.
It's huge!
Which means hours and hours of more Happy Horror Time excitement! Our bonus episodes usually involve us discussing horror films that fall under like a fun theme or a popular franchise. Trust me, you're going to love them.
And if you'd like to contact us, send an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. We love hearing from our listeners.
I'm Matt Emmert.
And I'm Tim Murdoch.
And we hope you have a happy horror time.
We'll be right back. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.